Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good Friday here, this wonderful week of the 17th. You're listening to one of the greatest shows on Blog Talk Radio, Southern Sense. And today, you are our guest. We also have with us the most fantastic and ingenious and enhanced co-host in all of Blog Talk land, Kulma. Good afternoon, Nikki.
Well, good afternoon, Annie. As always, a pleasure to be here on this Friday, May the 17th. The months keep moving. It's already May. And anyway, always a pleasure to be here. I have to say we don't really look over our shoulder and talk much about too many times in the past shows, but I'm still reeling from Tuesday's show. Wow, what an amazing guest we had from New Zealand, and just what a knowledgeable, educated person he was on the facts.
And he was such a gracious gentleman. Yeah. Prior to the show, I've only spoken to him briefly on the phone once, and we had sent some texts back and forth and messages, but every time it was very gracious, and he was extremely humorous, too. So, you know, we had a great guest with Trevor Loud last week. We had the week before that, you were raving that she was the best, BK Ekman. And I started reading one of her books, which downloaded onto Kindle while Yanni was in the doctor the other day, and, I mean, it's great reading. Anything written by B.K. Ekman is fantastic read. I mean, we do have great guests, which is something that we are proud of. But today, our listeners are our guests. So as we get into talking about Benghazi and other items on the agenda, we welcome them to call in and do the conversation with us. But today's dedication, we're splitting it up into two parts. Because we are covering Benghazi, I want to take the four fallen heroes from Benghazi. We will dedicate the top of the hour here with two, and then halfway through the show, we will do the remaining two. I really don't have any background music for this. So, Mike, if you just pick anything, and we'll just get going with this. Anyone listening knows that we start off each show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication goes to four of them. Ambassador John Christopher Stevens, Foreign Service Information Management Officer Sean Smith, followed by Glenn Anthony Doherty and Tyrone Snowden Woods, who were also defending the embassy and the diplomat and Ambassador Stevens, and they were killed in this horrible ordeal. John Christopher Stevens was an American diplomat and a lawyer who served as the U.S. ambassador to Libya. Stevens was killed when the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, was attacked on September 11, 2012. Stevens joined the United States Foreign Service in 1991. His early overseas assignments included deputy principal officer and political section chief in Jerusalem, political officer in Damascus, counselor and political officer in Cairo, and counselor economic officer in Riyadh. In Washington, Stevens served as the director of the Office of Multilateral Nuclear and Security Affairs. Pearson's fellow with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, special assistant to the Undersecretary for Political Affairs, Iran desk officer, and staff assistant in the Bureau of Near East Affairs. He served in Libya twice previously as a deputy chief of mission and as a special representative to the National Transitional Council during the Libyan Revolution. He arrived in Tripoli in May of 2012. The U.S. ambassador to Libya. To most Libyans, J. Christopher Stevens was one of them. The U.S. ambassador had stood by them as they rose up and toppled Muammar Gaddafi's regime last year. What they cherished most was his unwavering optimism about their future. Chris Stevens died from severe asphyxiation caused by smoke inhalation after heavily armed men attacked the U.S. consulate in the east port city of Benghazi. The attackers claimed they were enraged by an American film that mocked the Prophet Muhammad. Benghazi residents called him as an affable and accessible diplomat. Many had spotted stepping out of the confines of the diplomatic mission compound to buy a sandwich and meet ordinary Libyans. Libyan Deputy Prime Minister Mustafa Abushkar described Mr. Stevens as a dear friend who played a key role in helping the revolution, which first erupted in Benghazi in February of 2011. The Obama administration sent Stevens to Benghazi as an envoy to the rebels. In this capacity, he coordinated the U.S. response to the humanitarian crisis. It was in Benghazi throughout the revolution and very instrumental in his support to Mr. Abushkar. Libyan's ambassador to the United States, Libyans were overjoyed. Well, Stevens said, relationships between governments are important, but relationships between people are the real foundation of mutual understanding. John Smith, a Foreign Service Information Management Officer, was among the four Americans murdered in an attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. Smith, husband and father of two, was also a devoted participant in the gaming community, EVE Online, during his spare time. It was the gamers who first realized that Smith was among the fallen in Tuesday's attack, Talking Points memo reports. In an obituary for Smith and his online pseudonym, Kyle Rat, Alex John Coro, or the Mittany, on EVE wrote about his six-year relationship with Smith, both on and offline. He noted that he was a great diplomat in the game and highlighted a message Smith posted referencing the attacks. 12:54:09 p.m. Benghazi time, he writes, assuming we won't die tonight, we saw one of our police that guard the compound taking pictures. I'm clearly in shock as I write this. Everything is buzzing around my head, funnily, and feel kind of dead inside. I'm not sure how I'm supposed to react to my friend being killed by a mob in post-revolutionary Libya, but it's pretty awful. And Sean was a big guy. He was a goddamn master at the game we all play. Even though a lot of people may not realize how significant and influence he had, it seems kind of trivial to raise a husband, father, and overall badass for his skills in an internet spaceship game. But that's how most of us know him. So there you go. While the gaming community mourned, so did too the State Department and the rest of the nation. He was a husband to his wife, Heather, with whom I spoke this morning. He was father of two children, Samantha and Nathan, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said in prepared remarks. They will grow up being proud of service to their father that had gave to our country, service that took him from Pretoria to Baghdad and finally Benghazi. To all the brave men and women who are serving in all capacities, whether they serve in civil service to our nation or in military service, we dedicate the song to all of them. My Name is America by Todd Allen. God bless them all.
In the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be I stand for my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour, because my name is America. I stand. I cannot be broken. I
Todd Allen Harrington. My name is America. Well, Mike, we're going to have a real fun show here today.
Well, I don't know about that. We got to wait until these topics, Annie, they tend to be the ones that put a flare under both of our butts. So, and of course, the Benghazi is, of course, again, it's resurfacing. And I don't know which topic you want to take first, but even this morning on MSNBC, a Democrat acknowledged this is going to be bigger than Watergate.
You're talking about the IRS?
Well, no, I think it was Benghazi because here's the logistics of what I think they're saying. We'll get on the IRS. Why do we even got to talk about these topics? I'm not about to put the computer right out the damn window. But these emails released on Benghazi, many of them are referencing from other emails that are not existent in the emails released. So in some ways, these are the Watergate tapes with the missing minutes.
Well, they've only released 100 out of what they believe to be 26,000 emails. Only 100 pages out of all those thousands. And that's a conservative figure. They feel that there are even more. Now, I downloaded them last night, and I only got through like a page or two. As a matter of fact, I'm going to pull them up right as we're talking. And they're in a PDF form that people can just take and upload. If you've got Adobe Acrobat or another PDF reader, you can pick it up. And they're marked top secret. There's a lot of redaction in there, a lot of cross-referencing. They're also talking about certain words could be interpreted a different way. And then they're indicating that they don't know who's responsible. When they were being attacked, they are saying that it's Ansar al-Sharia. And isn't it odd that they find the ambassador's body at a hospital that is run by Ansar al-Sharia? And I believe Gregory Riggs, in his testimony, said that he was absolutely stunned to find that the ambassador's body was delivered to the enemies, quote, is what he said. To the enemy. So at the time when they located the ambassador's body, Gregory Hicks knew, number one, they were under attack from Ansar al-Sharia. The hospital that the ambassador was sent to was maintained by Ansar al-Sharia. There's a lot stuff going on. Like I said, I only read the first few pages, and I urge everyone to go do an internet search. I forget where I found it. Otherwise, I put a link there, but they're just do emails, and somewhere along the way, they'll say download, and you can just download the whole thing. And you know, we do have a couple of callers here. We've got our friend Tom on hold, and we also have a Skype caller. Skype caller, you're on the air live, Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to?
Well, I just thought I'd say hi to you.
Hey, Joe, this is a good topic to have Joe on. Hi, Joe. Welcome.
How are you guys doing?
Well, we're about to discuss Benghazi and the IRS, so it's good to have you with us.
Yeah, Benghazi. Isn't it nice? Isn't it nice, huh? You know, ordinarily, and I'm glad that we didn't do this, but ordinarily when an ambassador gets killed, that's usually a legitimate international reason for going to war, and I'm glad that we didn't do it. But then I was listening to you, Southern Sense, talking about the 100 pages out of thousands. Yeah, isn't that nice? Isn't that the nice, transparent policy of Obama? 100 pages. And then, of course, there are some journalists who are doing their job, and they are noticing that the pages that are being released, or the ones that they've reviewed anyway, refer back to a stand-down order coming from either the State Department or from Obama, and they also refer to contradictions in the email. So aren't we great that we live in a time like this when somebody in the Oval Office is just a freaking liar and a half?
It is absolutely astounding. Now I do have some clips here, and I'm trying to see when it was that this was a stand down order. So bear with me as I try to locate this stuff.
One of the things that really is disturbing to me And this is here, we're going through this problem in the United States. But in all honesty, we get very upset in politics, well, us who believe in the Constitution. Now, I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We don't want the federal government in our business. How in the hell can a stand-down order from the United States come to Benghazi? I mean, they don't know what the heck. They only know in text or in email, electronic words, what is taking place. Who in the hell gives them the right to order a stand-down? If they are attacking, I mean, you have to make that decision right there. These military people are well-trained. That is one of the reasons they are abroad. I mean, this is just ridiculous.
Well, Mike, I've got this here. Let me play this clip. It's about 4 minutes, so just bear with us, because he covers two parts of this stand-down order. So here, this is Gregory
Hicks' testimony. Phone call after the interview, I asked.
This is after Secretary Rice has went on television and misled the American people. You're on a phone call with Beth Jones, and it all seems to change then because you asked Beth Jones what?
I asked her why the ambassador had said there was a demonstration when the embassy had reported only an attack.
And again, what kind of response did you get from Beth Jones when you asked that question?
She said, I don't know.
Was it like, you shouldn't be asking that question, you should be quiet, we don't want to talk about that? What was the sense you got?
The sense I got was that I needed to stop the line of questioning.
And did things continue to deteriorate between you and your superiors? After they've given you all this praise, you've had this outstanding service record, 22 years serving our country, things began to deteriorate even more. And as I read the transcript, it seems to me that it came to a head in phone calls you were on with lawyers from the Department of State prior to Congressman Chaffetz coming to visit in Libya. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
And tell me about those conversations, what those lawyers instructed you to do on Mr. Chaffetz's visit to Libya.
I was instructed not to allow the RSO, the acting deputy chief of mission, and myself to be personally interviewed by Congressman Chaffetz.
So the people at state told you don't talk to the guy who's coming to investigate?
Yes, sir.
Said don't talk with the congressman? Now, you've had several congressional delegations come to various places you've been around the world. Has that ever happened where lawyers get on the phone to you prior to a congressional delegation coming to investigate a time when we've had four Americans lose their lives? Have you ever had anyone tell you, don't talk with the people from Congress coming to find out what took place?
Never.
Never. And you've had dozens and dozens of congressional delegations that you've been a part of?
Yes, sir.
First time it's ever happened?
Yes, sir.
Tell me about, and also, isn't it true that one of those lawyers on the phone call accompanied the folks on the delegation and tried to be in every single meeting you had with Mr. Chaffetz and the delegation from this committee?
Yes, sir. That's true.
Tell me what happened when you got a classified briefing with Mr. Chaffetz. What happened and the phone call that happened after that?
The lawyer was excluded from the meeting because his clearance was not high enough, and the delegation had insisted that the briefing not be limited by any...
Did the lawyer try to get in that briefing?
He tried, yes, but the annex chief and would not allow it because the briefing needed to be at the appropriate level of clearance.
And you had a subsequent conversation after this classified briefing that the lawyer was not allowed to be in, with you and Mr. Chaffetz and others on that delegation. And you had another conversation on the phone with Cheryl Mills. Tell me, who is Cheryl Mills?
She's counselor for the Department of State and chief of staff to Secretary Clinton.
That's a pretty important position.
Yes, sir.
When she calls, you take the phone call?
Immediately.
Yeah, she's the fixer for the Secretary of State. She is as close as you can get to Secretary Clinton. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
And tell me about that phone call you had with Cheryl Mills.
A phone call from that senior person is, generally speaking, not considered to be good news.
And what did she have to say to you?
She demanded a report on the visit.
Was she upset by the fact that this lawyer was not, this
was upset.
Babysitter, this spy, whatever you want to call him, was not allowed to be in that? First time it's ever happened, all the congressional delegations you've ever entertained was not allowed to be in that classified briefing. Was she upset about that fact?
She was very upset.
So this goes right to the person next to Secretary Clinton. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, here's a guy with 22 years of outstanding service to our country. 22 years. Outstanding service, praised by everybody who counts, the president, the secretary, everyone above him. And yet now they're obstructing it because he won't help them cover this up. He's an honorable man here telling the truth. Now is getting this kind of treatment from the very people who praised him before. This is why this hearing is so important. I yield back.
I thank the gentleman.
Now, isn't that interesting? Go straight up to Clinton. And she claimed, what does it matter?
There's not enough disgusting words in the vocabulary to describe from Obama to the Clinton. I mean, they are just, they are exactly what the founding fathers fought against. I mean, it's those people. They could, one could be King George and the other could all be his lackeys. But I mean, this is exactly President Obama in my lifetime. I really wonder if it's possible, even if we went to communism, we could have a worse president.
Well, you know, I have to say one thing that it should buoy us, because the pit bull in that questioning was Representative Jordan. People remember the names of these solid conservatives that are going for the judger of this administration. Representative Jordan is one of them. Also have Representative Gosar, who's also going to be up in a clip a little later on.
Let me say this. Kudos to you guys for you doing your research. And ordinarily, I would agree with you, Annie, about these guys being the pit bull interrogator. However, Congress is kind of famous for those who actually do the research with Congress for putting up these smoke and mirror circus scene fiascos. So these guys appear like they're doing the job, and they are doing the right thing and asking the right questions, but whether or not it'll get results, we have to see.
Well, it's where we hold their feet to the fire.
Well, hang on a second. Hang on a second. Go ahead. Hang on. Go ahead with the example.
Like, for example, with Obamacare, today it's up for a vote. It's the 37th time that the House is going to vote on repealing Obamacare. But even the reporters say it's not going to be repealed. So why are they doing it? Smokescreen to let the people in their districts know. Well, you see, Mr. and Mrs. Dope, we did this up in Congress for you. You're our constituents. We're thinking about you. But the other side prevented it. Same thing here. I want to know what the results are out of Benghazi. He should be impeached. If they investigate further and they find out that not only did Clinton know, but it went up to Obama and they covered it up and they gave a stand down order. And as I was telling some other people a few days ago, somebody had told me that the president is the only one that's supposed to allow proactively to have troops come in when a conflict is under attack the way that it was. And I'm saying, well, hold on a minute. This is the United States military. We know that we're in foreign territory, which is hostile. If we can't get a hold of Clinton or whoever the Secretary of State is, and we can't get a hold of the president, don't you think there are protocols in place that would allow somebody to give an order to allow Marines, the Navy, the Air Force, to do something to help out a conflict under attack? The person said, well, it sounds reasonable, but... Okay? So we don't really know what's going on. Things don't really adhere to common sense. And I think Mike is pretty much on the ball when he says we couldn't be under a worse rule under a straight communist nation than we are now. I think that's a little over the top, because if we were under a strict communist totalitarian protocol, we'd be like Russia, but we're getting there. Don't anybody fool themselves into thinking that we're not about two steps closer.
We got to get to Thomas, but I just want to make a comment before we grab Thomas, is that keep in mind, President Obozo, he got on television, and he said something along the lines, it's because of that TV show or movie or cartoon, that whatever it was. He distinctly said this was that in itself is perjury. No president is that stupid. It isn't even possible that an idiot could have made that story up. I mean, it is very clear he knew what had happened. He was lying with a capital L-Y-I-N-G, and I don't believe impeachment in this. This is treason. I mean,
if we find out that he – you know what I also said? Now, this is a scenario that I had introduced, and after going through it, the person I was talking to kind of agreed with me. Isn't it possible that Stevens, because remember now, it's coming out that that particular consulate was involved in gun running and in drug running.
Don't go too far ahead, Joe. I got that clip for later on.
Hey, you.
Hey, let's grab Thomas, Annie.
Let's bring Thomas on. If I get his mic to go hot here. And Thomas, you're on the air. Put your clothes back on.
Oh, I'm just sitting back and listening to the conversation. I haven't heard Joe before, but I like this guy. But I want to point out to you guys something really, really, really interesting. And you guys may or may not remember me saying it, because one of the biggest issues that I've always taken issue with was all the hand-wringing among conservatives. And we said, oh, they're doing this. Oh, they're doing this. Oh, they're doing this. And if you guys both remember, I would say, you guys just kind of watch, because it will all come crumbling down. And I was talking to my cousin the other day on Facebook, and I reminded her, I asked her, I said, do you remember when we was talking on the phone back in 2008 after the election? Because I was in tears. And I'm not ashamed to say this on the air. I cried because of his election. Not because I was happy, but because of what I knew was coming. And I told my cousin, this president will go down as the most corrupt president in the history of this nation. Because those of us who was actually paying attention, not just from a practical standpoint of view, but for those of you who are of faith like mine, from a spiritual standpoint of view, you could read that man like a book. And I saw it coming. And here's the thing, though. Everything that he has set into place, all his support for, you know, the different things, the gay marriage, all that stuff, they're talking about today. I think someone mentioned it in the chat room, that a bill was passed to stop the IRS from even being able to implement Obamacare. So I say this, you look at whatever, I mean, Annie, I know you've been focused on the Benghazi stuff, but it just, oh my God. We're interviewing on my show today the gentleman, Mark Crutcher from Dallas, Texas. He was the gentleman who got the undercover video of the abortion clinic workers from Houston, of the guy who was twisting the heads off the babies that were born alive. So I bring this point up to say this. Everything that these pro-death communist pieces of trash have supported is crumbling around them. And so we're interviewing Mark Crutcher tonight. Everything the Democrats have supported, their pet projects, they're done for. 2014 coming, you're going to see a wave unlike you have never seen in this nation. So we have to keep doing what we're doing. Annie, bring you having guests like Joe and many others, we have to pounce on this momentum now. We have to step up, and all to all the conservatives who still wringing their hands and acting like a bunch of lily-livered cowards, shut up, grow up, do something, and let's go kick ass in 2014. That's all I got to say.
Thanks, Thomas.
Well, you know, we got to keep in mind, as Republicans, we need Rush Limbaugh Republicans. We've had enough George Bushes. We need the Rush, the conservatives who aren't afraid to wave the colors in people's faces, aren't afraid to bring the topic of Jesus in our schools. I look at someone like John Boehner, and I match him against somebody like Newt was in a House Speaker, one from the 90s and one from another generation. I mean, Boehner couldn't even hold Newt's jock strap. I mean, it just really, we need the Rush Limbaugh fiscal conservatives, the real conservatives. This, again, is just such a big disappointment. Go ahead, Joe.
I want you guys to think about this particular situation that I had, that I was thinking about with regards to Benghazi. Take about 30 seconds, and it might be a spoiler for you, Annie. I don't think you're going to introduce a clip that's going to talk about this. I believe it's very possible that the real crime here with Benghazi is not the cover-up. I believe it's very possible that the United States government allowed...
Oh, you just did it again.
What? What I do? What?
Exactly what you're going to say, that they allowed Steve to be murdered, and it had to do with the cover-up on the guns.
You're right, Annie. You're right.
Well, finish it. Wait a minute. For those who don't know, go ahead and finish it, Joe, so we can...
All right. That they would not only allow it, but probably ordered it. Because remember, they had the Syrian guard outside the embassy. When the Syrian guard saw the so-called demonstrators coming, what did they do? They took off.
Yep.
They didn't protect the embassy. Why is that? Because they were told to get out of there. If they were told to get out of there, what good are they in protecting the embassy? And why didn't we have security there? Because they were setting Stevens up, because he probably was going to turn into a whistleblower. In my hypothetical situation, talking about guns and the rumor that that particular compound is the CIA compound for pushing drugs.
All right. Well, we've got some other callers coming in, starting to stack up here.
Hang on. A quick comment. A good friend of the show and a good friend of mine who ran for U.S. Senate in Maryland, Dan Bongino, mentioned that he worked for the Secret Service for years. He mentioned this on the show prior to the election, that he thinks that if the truth really were exposed, he said people wouldn't believe, they wouldn't believe it because it's so big. And that would indicate what you guys said. That would indicate CIA.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ann, to make it to be a spoiler, but I didn't know you were going to talk about that.
Joe, you should know I am meticulous in my research.
What the hell kind of president doesn't defend our freaking military men and women? I mean, what kind of asshole do we have where you can just take away the lives of soldiers who are doing volunteering for us? That the life means nothing. You know, I'll tell you. The same kind Thomas described, that they could twist the head of a baby.
Yep. All right, we got area code 661. You're on the air live with SubSense. I'm your host, Annie. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Annie. How are you? It's Bob. Thanks for taking my call. Good
Hi,
to talk
Bob.
To you again. Yeah, you mentioned Dan Bongino. He's really good. He's here in Maryland. I've heard him many, many times here on the radio station in Baltimore City, WBAL. In fact, he was on a couple days ago, and I think somebody broke into his house or something, or somebody stole his Secret Service watch or something. So that's out there now. Huh. But one angle I want to talk about for a second is the media. You know, it's interesting. One thing I've learned about liberals that when they're so self-absorbed and so brainwashed that they never get it until it personally smacks them directly in the face. And we've seen that with the media and the Department of Justice with the Associated Press thing that's been happening here. Now, since that happened, they're putting heat on Obama. I really do think that he would have slid totally scot-free if that Associated Press and Department of Justice thing hadn't happened. But now that it smacked them directly in the face, now they are asking some tough questions finally. Isn't that something?
What is that? What is that? I've not heard about that, the Associated Press.
The AP phone records, yeah.
Right, phone
okay,
records.
Okay.
Department
right.
of Justice,
okay.
Phone records. And there's a big stink in the media. They're all very, very pissed off about it because they, yeah. You know, they want their autonomy as what they call themselves, the nation's watchdogs or whatever. You know, but now, you know, and it had to literally become a personal thing with them where their freedom of speech, First Amendment, freedom of the press, et cetera, is getting, you know, infringed upon before they actually will now do their jobs, you know, as opposed to carrying water for Obama for the last, well, since he gave the speech in 2004, basically. You know what I mean? It's just so indicative of liberalism, of liberals themselves.
When I saw that break, what happened was ProPublica, I think they're called, they thought they were going to be doing the administration a favor. They thought they were handing them a gift, you know, how they flash a little shiny ball on another crisis to take your eyes off of what they're working on at the moment. So in order to take your eyes off of Benghazi, they flashed this. In order to take your eyes off the Tea Party, they flashed this, thinking that they're going to go, oh, the media is going to say, oh, we were protecting their security, so we're not going to get upset about it. It backfired, and they shat upon themselves.
Well, the media themselves clearly are on the side of Obama. And just another, everybody knows this, but this is just to get this off my conscience, to show what a hypocrite Barack Obama is, who is the worst president in our country's history. And I hope we never see anyone near like him before, again, I should say. But after the Boston issue, where they were sending stormtroopers into people's houses, fully armed, just going in there without warrant or any, he ends the speech with one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. What if I were to tell this guy, no, you're not coming in my house? What kind of liberties I'd get to meet God? I mean, what kind of justice is that? But that's oh, I didn't see all the callers we have in. We better get to them. But that just goes to show you what a you know, Rush just has it perfect. I mean, those who don't follow Limbaugh, you are lost.
But he also believes that Obama's not in any danger.
Well, I don't believe he's in any danger either, Joe. I think he is.
He's going to be protected. Already did in today's testimony. Start to put layers between Obama and the IRS. Let me bring the next caller in. It's Catgirl23. You're on the air live with some sense.
Hey. Yeah, I've been listening to you guys talk, and I'd just like to put my two cents in. I think the bigger scandal here is the Benghazi scandal. And I'd just like to tell you what I think about it, and you can – I just want to talk about the possibilities of what happened there that day. I don't think the gun running issue is what we should focus on, because the CIA runs guns all over the world to and uses drugs to fund covert operations. I mean, that's just business as usual. I think it's highly possible that what happened in Benghazi was like a perfect storm. You had Obama coming up for re-election. You had Morsi in Egypt, who had promised, like almost immediately after he was elected, that he was dedicated to getting the blind sheik released. And I don't know, Annie, if you've discussed this on your show or not, but there are protesters that are protected in Cairo. There are protesters who have been there. They're protected by the military, and they've been there since the blind sheik was incarcerated. So Morsi promised them that he was going to get the blind sheik released. And if you remember, when those people that were carrying the body of the ambassador, they were yelling, Morsi sent us, Morsi sent us, don't shoot. I think what happened, I think it's very possible that what happened, Morsi knew there was gun running out of Benghazi. And he used that as an opportunity to grab Stevens, and I think Obama learned a lot from the Carter administration. He was not going to put up with a hostage situation whereby Stevens and the other employees would be held as ransom for the release of the blind sheik. And I think the decision was made to let the chips fall where they may, and they didn't give him protection. I think it's highly possible. I don't think that the gun running is – I think the CIA is so comfortable in doing this now that we don't – they don't think twice about it. So I don't think the gun running issue is as big as the CIA.
It is all tied in, and I'll get to that in a little bit. We're at the halfway point of the show, and I've got to do two final, Glenn Doherty and Tyrone Woods dedication. So if everyone will just bear with us just for a few minutes, we'll bring you all back on live, okay?
Okay.
Right. Mike, if you can, play the dedication music again. And this is to Glenn Anthony Doherty and Tyrone Snowden Woods. Glenn Anthony Doherty was the second of three children born to Bernard Ben Doherty, now Charlestown, Mass., and Barbara Doherty, now of Woodburn, Mass. His older brother is Greg Doherty of Kensington, California. His younger sister, Kate Quigley of Marblehead, Mass. The siblings were great lifelong friends. They grew up in Winchester, Massachusetts, across the street from a patch of woods. They first fell in love with the outdoors. Ben Doherty, the son of Irish immigrants, raised the children to be athletic, tough, hardworking, and family-minded. Barbara Doherty, who opened and ran a candy store for years in Lexington called the Candy Castle, raised her children to be kind to everyone, opened her home as a second home for all of her children's friends. Glenn was very loyal to his friends and family. He kept the same group of friends since elementary school. It was their loyalty to each other and the fun-loving nature that brought them from being a one-time crew of social misfits to the center of an awful lot of damn fun, people of all stripes who remain tight to this day. After high school, Glenn attended Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Arizona, where he flew planes, rode a motorcycle, and decided that the only thing cooler to do was what he was going to do and go up and leave. His fearlessness took many forms throughout his life, but it was always his core. He became a ski bum at Snowbird, Utah in the winters, working at restaurants, and became a phenomenal skier in both regular and two-mark skis, as well as a talented cook and after-party expert. In the summers, he was a water rafting guide down the Colorado River. His athleticism also led him to become a triathlete during this period. A desire to push himself to use his talent and to change the world led him to join the Navy SEALs in 1995. After training, he became a paramedic and a sniper committed to his area population. His team responded to the USS Cole attack, among other missions. 2001, he got knees reconstructed and was planning on entering the military when September 11th happened. He now was not allowed to leave and didn't want to. He met Sonia Johnson, his girlfriend, whom he'd known since high school, and went overseas again. Participated in two tours of the 2003 Gulf War Iraq Kingdom. In the first, his team began by securing Great Oil Reserve before the invasion officially began, with the environmentally disastrous reoccurrence of them being burned, as had happened under Saddam's orders during Desert Storm in 1991. Then they led the earliest Marine pigeon, battling on the move from the south of Iraq towards Baghdad. He was SEALs unit for sniper duty for several days, returned to it before taking of Baghdad, and continued to take Saddam's hometown of Tikrit, where it finally got a leader. In typical fashion, Glenn made close lifelong friends with a number of his members. In 2005, he exited his SEALs, but really focused on the region through private security contracting work that generally turned to the region in a pattern of about 3 months overseas and a month or two back home. Wrote a book on sniping, 21st Century Sniper, a complete tactical guide with his friend Brandon Webb. Tyrone Snowden Woods, Senior Chief Petty Officer, U.S. Navy SEAL, retired. Died while defending the U.S. diplomatic post in Benghazi, Libya. He was 41. The brave actions of Tyrone, his SEAL teammate Glenn Daugherty, saved the lives of 30 staff when the two SEALs stepped into the breach to protect the compound as it was attacked by insurgents. Tyrone and Glenn left their secure annex location some distance away to make their way to the mission compound, where they were able to gather the diplomatic staff and escort them to a safe house. It was during a second, more violent attack that Tyrone and Glenn were killed. Tyrone was born in Portland, Oregon, and spent his childhood in Long Creek, Oregon, Anna Quartz, Washington, and Oregon City, Oregon. Growing up, he was an inquisitive, busy, fearless child. He learned to hunt while living on a ranch in eastern Oregon with his .22 in hand. No brown squirrel was ever safe. By the time he was a teen and living in Anna Quartz, he had learned and earned an Oregon Hunter's Safety Card, and was also certified PADI diver, all indications of what was to come later in life. During his school grade years, he participated in wrestling, which became a means for channeling his grit, determination, and competitiveness. In 89, during his senior year at Oregon City High School, he placed second in district, fifth in state, in the 135-pound weight class. He also set new school record. In 1990, he joined the Navy and set a personal goal to become a SEAL. During his BUDS training, he went through Hell Week twice and proudly received his trident in October 91. At various stages in his career, he was a medical corpsman, a paramedic in SEAL Teams 1, 3, and 5, and served multiple tours of duty in Somalia, Iraq, and Afghanistan. He spent 2 years with the Navy's Expedition Parachute Team, the Leapfrogs. In 2010, he retired from Navy, including 20 years of honorable service to his country. Together with being a decorated serviceman, he was a recipient of the Bronze Star with the Combat Medal, an Expert Marksmanship Ribbon, among other awards. In addition to being a SEAL, he was also a board-certified RN in California and had worked at the Naval Medical Center in San Diego, as well as on staff at his wife's dental practice. For the past 2 years, he worked as a personal service contractor protecting U.S. American diplomatic personnel in posts ranging from Central America to the Middle East. He was also an avid runner, surfer, and car enthusiast. He was especially fond of fast cars and motorcycles and owned several Ford Cobra Mustangs that he meticulously maintained. His automotive skills were learned as a teenager inside of his grandfather, Eddie Croft, who taught him how to maintain and repair his cars. Because his run was extremely neat, his cars were always in immaculate condition, with the engine so clean you can eat off of them. Friends were an important part of Tyrone's life. He kept in contact with them, whether they lived in San Diego or in Oregon. Many of these friends had written tributes to Tyrone on Facebook at Tyrone's S. Wood, U.S. Navy Memorial page, described as energetic, smiling, confident, loyal, and funny. He was always able to make others laugh. His fearlessness and adventurousness spirit created some interesting and memorable times with his high school and military friends. Glenn Stone, a longtime buddy from basic training, remembered Tyrone with the words from Tecumseh, "Seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of people. Prepare a noble death so the day when over the great divide and die like a hero going home." And the dignified transfer ceremony, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton described Tyrone having the hands of a healer as well as the arm of a warrior. President Obama said that Tyrone was quiet, consummate, professional. The father of three sons, Tyrone Jr., Hunter, and Kyle. Besides the children by Dorothy of Henderson, Nevada, he survived by his mother, Cheryl Croft Bennett, his sister, Tiffany Woods, his uncle, Ed L. Croft, his father, Charles E. Wood, his two great uncles and aunts, and numerous cousins. To Tyrone, and to all those that we honor today and all days, I'm going to dedicate this song, "I Am America," by Christopher Lynch. God bless each and every one of them.
Say.
All right. So, Krista Branch, I Am America. I thought that song was completely appropriate for this dedication. I hope you enjoyed it and agree with me on that. Let me get Mike to bring back our guest because my screen is going just a little nuts here. I got Thomas on the line with Joe on the line and Bob. We got Catgirl and Cool Mike. And welcome everyone back.
Wow, thank
you. Yeah. We were talking just before we went to the final dedication, Kat, about the link between the arms and the attack on Benghazi. And I agree with Joe that it was orchestrated in such a manner that these details were not going to be going out. And it would tie the attack directly into Syria and Libya because Egypt was actually the fun conduit to get these weapons to the rebels. And we do believe that Stevens was sent specifically to Benghazi to help negotiate the transfer of a lot of these arms, and that's how Morsi got involved. And, Joe, I hope that you're agreeing with me on this. This is the way I'm looking at it.
Well, I don't know that much about the arms running, so I'm here to learn.
Okay.
That's a first.
All right, Mike, what's your opinion?
Well, I don't believe the government in whatever it does. It's that simple. Especially I had big problems believing George W. Bush times this by 10, and we have Barack Obama and anyone in his administration. I don't think they know the truth. I think they are all programmed socialists or communists, and I don't know what happens.
Well, I've got a clip here because this is a recent interview with Rand Paul after he listened to some of the testimony. This is only about a one-minute clip, so bear with us. It is opinion.
And I still think the one question has been lost in this whole cover-up with this movie being the cause. I really think part of the cause may have been that there was a gun-running operation going on in Benghazi, leaving Libya, going to Turkey, and distributing arms to the rebels.
Now, when you brought that up, Senator, excuse me for piping in, when you brought that up in the hearing with Hillary Clinton, she looked shocked. She said, I have no idea what you're talking about. And you know, we were just talking with Jennifer Griffin, who said, you know, perhaps the tail end of your question wasn't included. That gave it a little more context.
Well, the thing is that they've interviewed the captain of the ship. A ship from Libya sailed for Turkey a week before the ambassador was killed. It was full of arms. And they interviewed the captain, and he actually specifically talks about the distribution of the arms to Syrian rebels. So it sounds to me as if this is a story that's been reported in the London Times, the New York Times, and really I think the administration needs to answer, are they involved with running guns through Turkey to Syria?
You've raised the question. Senator, we'll see if we hear more about it today. Thank you very much, Rand Paul. Senator, good to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah, he mentioned Turkey. I was also hearing
about
through Egypt, too. I was hearing it going through both of them.
Wait a minute, did you hear me?
Yeah, I got
you. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
You mentioned you were going to say. I wonder, you know, there's an old saying that if Joe says, let's say we'll use Bob for an example, because Bob and I never agree on anything virtually. There's the old saying that in the middle lies the truth. There's this old saying that in the middle lies the truth. With this administration and these absolute liberals, I include the rhinos, I don't even think these people under hypnosis could tell the truth. And Obama elects he appoints these people that are a notch below feeble-minded. I mean, these people are even bad liars. At least with Clinton for a while, he was a decent liar before everything kind of unraveled. These people are, when Hillary said, I have no idea what you're talking about. We're just blog talkers, and we know what the hell he's talking about. Is she that stupid?
No,
sorry.
She's a sociopath.
Well, they're all sociopaths. Well, I agree there.
She is how could you look into the face of the parents and the coffins are there and say your child died because of a video? And they look and they say, yes, and Panetta did too. Obama did too. All of them did. They are like thick as thieves. They are almost like one person. person. They are of the same mindset. They have the same goal. And the thing is, we haven't figured out exactly what their goal is. They're using us like we're idiots, like we don't even care. Oh, well, we'll just lie to them. It doesn't matter anymore. They'll believe anything we say. I still say this is bigger than gun running.
Well, it's not just gun running. It's the fact that you hear American soil is being attacked. Your ambassador, your own people are under fire. Less than minutes away at the annex, they had men ready to go. You had just, 3 miles away in Tripoli, they were up, they were ready, they were armed, and they could have been within half an hour. This battle reached 7 hours. It takes just 30 seconds to go, hey, should I go, shouldn't I go? Act shouldn't even take you 30 seconds, shouldn't even take you 3 seconds. Go protect our people. But we had this stuff there, and they're saying that the planes in Italy, they didn't have the refueling. That has been debunked. They could have had the flights over there within 2 hours. That was debunked. 7 hours ahead. Yeah.
Well, people
they
there were
show up until 18 days later. 18 days, they found the diary of the ambassador. And who found it? Yeah. A news organization. And then they got pissed off because that news organization decided to put excerpts of the diary out there. Hello, at this point, it's finders, keepers, and tough shit.
Well, that's
right,
Annie.
You guys were talking about gun running and stuff, Annie. I mean, I don't know all the facts of that as much as you do about that stuff, but I just look at it like this. We know for a fact about Fast and Furious, and we know what communist regimes throughout world history have done, so I won't put anything past these people. Nothing. The day that the Border Patrol agent got murdered during the Fast and Furious, Hillary was saying that it's our fault that, you know, there's so many guns in Mexico. They were using that for propaganda purposes. So why wouldn't they run guns over there in Benghazi as well?
Of course
that's
they could.
Yeah,
but here's one thing I want to know about.
I just want to put one question to you. Don't you think it's a little odd that they're allowing guns to run to criminals and terrorists, our enemies, and they want to take our guns away?
Exactly.
No, we know that. Bob pointed, throughout history, you disarm the citizenry. Clearly, we know what's taking place here. This isn't 1776.
Yeah. Well,
we know what's taking place. Are we going to do something about it? And, you know, our good friend Dr. Jones, who our prayers are with, as she's trying to recover, he pointed this out on his show numerous times as a historian. This has all taken place in many of countries, many a times, decade after decade. And the countries that do nothing about it, we know the final chapter of that book. And, you know, they also eliminate God, too. I mean, why bother to worship God when you have a government?
Joe, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Joe, we keep on cutting poor Joe off. Joe, I'm sorry.
Poor Joe.
Can we have a telephone from me? Thanks.
Touchy-feely here.
Thank you, baby.
Give a red line.
Here's the thing. I want to know, isn't Turkey and Syria supposedly at war or our enemies?
No, Turkey has always been our ally.
Is Turkey an enemy of Syria?
Yes, they are, and that's why it's dishonest to not talk about Benghazi without talking about Turkey and Syria.
Okay, so here's my question. When I was listening to the clip, they said that they were running guns, or the accusations that they were running guns through Turkey to the Syrian rebels. How the hell is that being done?
They go across the Mediterranean and bring it into Syria from the north.
No, I'm not talking about geographically. I mean, why would Turkey, I'm sure they have security over there. Why would Turkey allow this?
Because it's much bigger than just saying that they're on one side or the other. in the Muslim world, they believe in the return of the caliph. They want to reform the Ottoman Empire with Turkey being at the seat of power and running the show. That's the ultimate goal. That's why they fight over there all the time.
Well, yeah, but then Turkey would have stopped the arms from getting to Syria, not allow it.
Well, actually, the U.S., let me give a little fact here. The U.S. has been arming Syrian opposition since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
The post-Gaddafi government also itself a top funded and armed supplier of the Syrian opposition. And this brings us into Stevens, because Stevens and the State Department work directly with, I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name, I'm going to try it, Abdel Hakim Bahaj of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. Now, catch this. Bahaj has direct connection to al-Qaeda. They are knowingly sending dark weapons to al-Qaeda to support the opposition.
Oh, yeah, and then the opposition.
Support the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, taking the Muslim Brotherhood into the White House.
Right.
Oh, come on, Annie, no way. You homophobe. This is diversity. Come on.
And every time we support them, they backfire on us. So the whole thing is that if we're supplying arms to the Syrian rebels, are we thinking about somehow going into Turkey next or not? Are we,
mind keeps on going back to Iran-Contra, and didn't they send Ali North to jail for this very same thing involving drugs and guns to
Did he go to jail?
Yeah, he never went to jail, that I remember.
No, but if I'm not mistaken,
I think that they have
Bob,
sentence. I do know they convicted him.
Okay.
Okay, if I'm not mistaken, Bob probably can answer this. I'm not a historian on the first war in Iraq. But if I'm not mistaken, Turkey requested our troops in northern Iraq, to protect their border.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mike.
When they invaded Kuwait.
But they wanted something in exchange for that. And they wanted that area of Iraq to – if we went in there, they wanted control over that. They want that land back to be part of Turkey.
They wanted it also to be Kurd-free. They wanted the Kurds out of there, too, because the Kurds are a thorn in the sides of the Turks.
Kurds are going nowhere right now. They've built themselves an empire there in the north.
How large is the Turkish army?
Oh, jeez.
I don't think it's that significant. I just read
today that it has 400,000 NATO-supplied NATO troops in its army.
Oh, NATO troops. Now, keep in mind, Kurdistan has an army which they've recruited some Americans. They have in the north in Kurdistan. You gotta like go online and see this. They have McDonald's, Walmart. I mean, it's basically like it's a huge American city is what it is. Go ahead.
More like a Mexican city, but let's not say the U.S.
Well, they got McDonald's and they got Walmart, but either way. The bottom line is that what Joe said is right. If indeed Osama bin Laden was responsible, if someone's doing dishes, but if Joe is accurate, if indeed Osama bin Laden was the culprit of 9/11, he was our ally at one time, and I mean we can go back on, and Joe is accurate. These things have continued to bite us. These constant, well, let's deal with this person because they're not as bad as that person. This is beyond coming back to bite us, especially when buildings bigger than one or two stories in our own country are crumbling down to the ground.
And the third one crumbles not from the top but from the bottom when it wasn't even hit.
The third one was blown up. That was detonated. But also, I don't know if a lot of our guests know this. Our host here was a police officer in New York during the first attack in 93.
Oh, yeah. I remember that day. I remember that day like it was just yesterday. Oh, God, you just gave me chills, because my sister-in-law was in one of the towers. She worked for Merrill Lynch, and she didn't get her car out of there, I think, until maybe 3 or 4 years later. And at that point, she said, just tow wherever you want. I don't want that car anymore. She was in the buildings. I do remember that day, February 1993.
And then Bin Laden attacked again in 98, and then supposedly he attacked again in 2001. But here's a guy who's supposedly a billionaire, hates the United States, but with his billions of dollars, let's say he's a $100 million. Somebody said to me that he wasn't really worth $1 billion, that he's only worth a few $100 million at the time before his presumed death by the Navy Six Seals. That if he was really up against the United States, if he really hated the United States, if you really hate somebody, you're going to do all you can with all the money, all the resources you have at your disposal to try to get rid of him. But ever since 2001, we never even came close to a dirty nuke attack. Why is that?
It's amazing. I had some stats here. Let me see if I can try to find them. Because, like I said, I do my homework. Because it had a comparison. How many times were attacked under Bush compared to Obama, and how many succeeded? And the statistics are absolutely startling. I can't remember which page I had it. But it's like night day.
I think a lot of
anything.
Well, we look. The whole thing is that we haven't been attacked. The government has told us that we were the object of multiple cells who may have wanted to attack us, but they cut them off at the pass. Of course, they don't mention that a lot of the cells were set up by the FBI. That they found some suckers, some saps, some people who were transitioning over from whatever religion they believed in to the Muslim religion. They were discontents. They were dissidents. And then they set these people up, and then they set them out during drill time, and got them out there. And then all of a sudden they get captured, and then all of a sudden it's part of the statistic of, look at the terror attacks we've helped prevent. Yet the agencies will admit they don't share information very well, but they're so competent at stopping these attacks. The point I'm getting is that, ladies and gentlemen, we do not have a legitimate war against terror. It is a war against the United States. And what you were talking about before, Mike, with the history of nations like Mao Zedong and Hitler and Stalin killing their own people, what is the major cause of death in the world? I'll tell you. Some people will say war. It's not. It's called democide. It's your own government killing you. So we have
communist governments. Communist governments.
No, any type of totalitarian government that wants to seize control of its own.
Totalitarian, yeah.
Well, not just that, but I mean, each day, obviously, the abortion is a huge killer. Just a perfect example, not to get off the topic, but think about this. Think of how insignificantly, as time goes on, really the black vote in the United States is becoming. Now, let's go back 30 years and basically prevent abortion. We obviously can't prevent all of it, but make it illegal. How significant is their vote now? What basically has happened is you have a huge influx of Asians and Latinos that are now really significant in the voting in the United States and which political direction we take, to whereas it could be in a matter of, who knows, 50 years, the black population of vote, their influence in politics could be really small. I mean, that just goes to show you, I mean, exactly what is taking place here.
Yeah, and I'll throw another scare into you also, because yesterday Obama appointed charge of Obamacare from the IRS, none other than the woman that was in charge of the Cleveland office when they made the attacks on the Tea Parties, and her name is Sarah Hall Ingram. Remember that name, ladies and gentlemen. She's going to be the one who's going to be administrating Obamacare. She's already gone after conservative groups and tea parties, and nothing has happened to her. They just took her out of that part of the IRS and put her into the Obamacare part of the IRS.
Right.
Was that
and
a promotion?
She got over $100,000 in bonuses in the last few years, too, I read, that woman you're talking about. And if you look at her, she looks kind of like a Janet Napolitano, Janet Reno type. Let me just say it, a bull dyke liberal.
Why do progressives have ugly women?
Well,
you know.
Well, because
I don't know.
The
GOP has some good-looking women.
Thank
I don't
you.
Like Kennedy very much, but all the guests he has that are female are are pretty good looking. But here's another thing to top what I believe this is too with the IRS. I believe this was a backdoor attack, not just on liberties, but on religious liberties. To whereas if you I believe just today, early this morning or yesterday, I think Rush played this or one of the conservatives played on his radio show, where a congressman from somewhere, I believe Ohio or somewhere, was asking this guy who got fired, this guy from the IRS, he brought up an email which was sent, and they wanted this Tea Party or this – no, it was a Right to Life group out of Iowa. They wanted to know specifically, in depth, their religious views on an issue that someone had sent in an email. They wanted to know the in-depths of the religious, which have nothing to do with it. Which clearly is an attack. That's a First Amendment attack right there. And the IRS has – go ahead.
You and I had this conversation on our last show, and we had discussed this because I formed our party back in May of 2009. And one of the critical things was us deciding whether or not we wanted to become a 501c4. I accidentally said C3. Sometimes I get the two of them confused. C4 is you can have an agenda such as teaching the Constitution, but you cannot – actively promote a specific candidate, working for or against a candidate. That's where you have the restrictions. And I helped a couple of the Tea Party groups form at the same time, and they were all struggling with this question because in February 2009, and he went on Neil Cavuto. I thought it was Hannity, but he went on Cavuto. I forget what the gentleman's name was. I think it was Mitchell or something like that. He had a group called Tax Cheat Stamp. And he came up with this idea of a rubber stamp that every time you get a currency bill, whether it's a 5, 10, 20, or whatever, you stamp tax cheat directly on top of Timothy Geithner's name. And I thought it was a very, very funny, except for the fact it's defacing U.S. currency, which happens to be a federal crime.
Yeah.
But he was the first one to be audited, not because he was defacing currency, but because he was acting out against the Obama administration, specifically Timothy Geithner. And that is where it started, back in 2009. And they keep on saying, well, I'm listening to the hearings, 2010, 2011, these memos went back and forth. Bullshit, guys. It was going on before that. And it also started in 2008, where they went after specifically Romney and one of his donors. So he was doing it before he even won the election.
I remember that. He was in Utah.
Now, they're going after Romney because he went with this group which stood for traditional marriage. Non-NOM was their initials. And because he and his donor both made donations to this group also, they said, we're going to audit them. They went after NOM, they went after Romney, they went after the donor.
Well, clearly, this took place, and we knew it before the story broke. But one of the most telling tales. Whatever happened to basically standing, for example, standing up and saying, you know what, I did this. Yes, I'm held accountable. I'm responsible. You have the president again. This is absolutely, positively unacceptable. We simply will not be putting up with it. Wait a minute. His whole party knew about this. I mean,
that's what makes it extremely suspicious, because if he had done it, even though it was only a few weeks before the election, if he had said, American people, the Secretary of State or I made a mistake in this especially tragic moment where Stevens got killed. It was due to incompetence. I will fire the people. Immediately, most of the people in the United States would have forgiven this guy. That's why there's something else going on that we don't know.
Not only that, when he was told about the attack, what does he do? He goes, I have to go to bed because I have to get up early to catch a flight to Las Vegas. He went to bed.
I can make – well, hang on a second. I want to make a statement. Anybody here – everyone here knows my opinion of George W. Bush. I think we know what's taking place here with Obama. George W. Bush did a lot of things I can't stand. But Barack Obama is an infidel. He's infiltrated. All his everything he is doing is totally changing our country from its 200-year history. Slowly we know that these bad people have been moving us. But since Obama has taken office and since his reelection, the transformation, those wheels are moving rapidly. And he knows his years are numbered, and when he wants to leave, he wants us so close to the edge of the cliff that instead of pushing us, we may jump ourselves. That's exactly what it is. Ignore the names. Forget the name Obama. Forget the name Bush. Forget Kennedy. Just go by simply the laws that they enact. Barack Obama, if you go by basically reading the laws he has passed, and the executive orders, this is taking us in a direction that we were in 1775.
But let's not forget Congress.
Also, Obama's already hitting himself the day he leaves his office, because I'm in this last year, and I don't even remember who's doing it, at the SEA or city unions. They're building him a really beautiful state in Hawaii for him when he leaves office. He's already planned that ahead. He's not paying a single penny for this mansion that they're building for him. They're doing it now. And Cat Girl, yes, you are unmuted.
I'd watch out for that.
We can go back to Clinton. If we want to start I'm sorry, too. I know we're over-talking each other. I think there's a phone delay that causes that sometimes. And I apologize for talking over anyone. But, you know, Clinton was no better. Clinton is the person who turned me off to the Democratic Party big time. I mean, there were so many stories about his drug running coke out of Mena, Arkansas, and then we put him in the White House, and what does he do? He gets legislation passed that builds all this private prison system. Sales of coke soar. Heroin in Plano, Texas, which is one of the most, wealthiest cities in the country in the 90s, and when George Bush became our governor, he cleaned that up because they had high school kids just dropping dead from ODing in these, rich white neighborhoods up there. And, I mean, yeah, I know you bash Bush a lot, but we could take and bash each president equally, But what's going on now? I mean, I remember the Watergate years and all that happened, the president's cabinet resigning in one weekend. And, I mean, what we have to dwell on with this Benghazi thing, though, is just like what took Nixon down. It's the cover-up.
Right.
Who was involved in all the – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say I agree with you, Kat, but for me, we have far too many good soldiers that have volunteered in our service. We have far too many of these people that leave their families, many of which have young children, many of which have lost their job, sadly, so they're forced to join the service. They take an oath to defend our Constitution. And when government itself, who also takes that oath, puts them in harm's reach to die purposely, knowingly, and blatantly, take away any president I've disliked, this is the ultimate form of treason, in my opinion. And it was created by this president and a former president's wife, period. And that says it all. And just a throwback.
We're coming down to our last 4 minutes, Mike. The next call just keeps on dropping off. I think BTR is telling him something. Anyway, I want to thank Thomas, Joe, Bob, and Batgirl for joining us. I mean, this has been a lively discussion, and we barely scratched the surface. We're going to do it again when we have another blank slot coming up. But right now, our slots are really next week. We're going to have Kevin Jackson Tuesday. Kevin Jackson has the Black Sphere, which is another BTR show here, followed by Niger Innes. We're going to have him. And then Nicole Starr Johnson will be returning to talk about the PTSD retreat that she has so much success on. And I've got a new author, Louis Surratt, on 31st, and his book just came in the mail today, The Disintegration of the Constitution from an Average American's Perspective. And it sounds pretty good reading. On that, we're going to follow on June 4th with Yaron Brook of Ayn Rand Institute. He'll be coming back as a repeat guest. And then we have a new musician, Matt Fitzgibbons, that has a collection of patriotic country songs. And we'll have him in on the 11th. So I want to thank everyone for joining us, and it's been a great and fantastic show. Mike, it has gone like that.
Yep, and thanks to all the callers and everyone. And keep in mind, just a quick note, Annie and I are working diligently to – we may have six of the candidates running for mayor to replace Michael Bloomberg in the city of New York late July. So anyway, that's something we're working on. We pull that off. We the kings of all creation.
All right. We don't have a date for that one yet, do we, Mike?
No, five of them – no, four have committed. No, one lady said that – we're winding down. But one lady almost, like to me, if you want the honor of our candidate, you have to, like, we had to adjust this, do like a Wednesday show. I told her to go, you can imagine that, but anyway,
yeah,
no.
Tell her that you're a host, one who runs the show, has Mark Sanford on speed dial, among others. Well, until we see you all again on Tuesday.
Thank you, everyone.
I will say good night and God bless. And prayer for my husband, Yanni, and I tomorrow. We are going to re-exchange our wedding vows for our 20th anniversary.
Yeah.
So
let's hope someone doesn't change their mind when they get there. All right.
I'll have
Thank you, everyone.
The ornament on top of the cake. So until then, until next Tuesday, have a safe, happy, and healthy weekend. Good night.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
American.